Sean, the holiday roster freeze is upon us, which means one thing. You are stuck with me for at least the rest of this episode.
Well, I can't think of anything better. That might be the best holiday gift I've ever gotten.
I'm frozen here. That's it. You can't move me, but it's the same way with you. And I appreciate that. That's a very nice thing to say. I know you're sarcastic and you don't mean it, but I appreciate it. Listen, hey, we got news, right? I mean, this week, the Ottawa Senators, the fourth team in the league to make a coaching change. Jacques Martin back behind the Senators bench. They're going to try to rewind it 20 years. They got the coach bump for about 20 minutes in their first game with Martin and Daniel Alfredson behind the bench, Sean. They looked good at the start of that game against the Coyotes. They had a 3-0 lead, but if the final score is an indication, and it should be, 4-3 Coyotes, this is not going to be an easy fix in Ottawa. It really isn't, because after 20 minutes, it looked great for the Ottawa Senators, up 3-0. But then you saw the Coyotes, who are a relentless team, stay relentless, and you saw the Ottawa Senators start to run around in their own zone a little bit, get a little scrambly, goal after goal after goal. They couldn't get the game to overtime. They needed to get the game to overtime. That point given up wouldn't be that big of a deal, and they couldn't even do that.
But there's a lot of talent there, Dan. I think if you're inheriting a job as a coach and you want to coach in the NHL, you know, talent-wise, I think this is a really good team. Confidence-wise, they're an absolute mess. And I think that's what you saw last night, right? Their talent came to shine in the first period, and they really took it to them. And then their confidence, they just weren't confident holding that lead. As soon as something went wrong, everything went wrong.
But there's a lot of talent. I mean, let's look at the Buffalo Sabres. There's a lot of talent with the Buffalo Sabres, too. They just lost 9-4 to the Columbus Blue Jackets. Talent only takes you so far, right? And the reason the Ottawa Senators made this coaching change, and if you ask anybody, DJ Smith, everybody loves him, right? But the reason they made this coaching change is Jacques Martin is supposed to bring, and listen, one game is not the sample size that we can go on here. Jacques Martin has to bring discipline. He has to bring structure to this team. They have to bring consistency. That's why, because they were not a consistent team under DJ Smith. They struggled at the start, then they started to look okay, and then they reverted back to the way they were playing. They've had injuries. They've had a lot of changes this season, and that might impact the consistency that they can play with, but they just got too much. They play too much on their heels. The talent is there, but they just play too much on their heels. And do you think that just goes back to confidence?
Yes. Like, you brought up the Buffalo Sabres. Like, Granato's a good coach. I don't think anybody can argue with that. I think he's put in place the systems to win on a consistent basis. I just don't think it's executed, and I don't think it's executed not because the Buffalo Sabres don't care or the Ottawa Senators don't care. I think it's not executed because what's going on between their ears. And
no, that's
when you need, that's when you need a motivator. That's when you need a new voice. That's when you need, like, hockey, there's structure in hockey, but in the end, it's the players, right, that make these things happen. And right now, like I said, you looked at Ottawa, they look like world beaters in the first period, and then one thing went wrong, and the wheels came off. Is that the coach's fault? I don't think so.
Well, no, it can't be. It's the players, because this is two different coaches now that they're playing for. Now, it's only one game. Quickly, Dave Haxtell from the Seattle Kraken, their coach, he's going to be joining us. We talked to Dave about the Winter Classic, about the Kraken, the struggles that they've had this season with, you know, led by their depth scoring last season, not getting it as much this season, being so close in so many games. That interview, we'll have that for you shortly. But let's go back here, Sean, because I did bring up the Buffalo Sabres. And this is not just to move past the Ottawa Senators. They have their own host of, we could do a whole show on the Ottawa Senators. But the Buffalo Sabres, and this goes to a question I got in my mailbag, are there any other coaches on the hot seat now in the National Hockey League with four changes already made? I don't think we're going to see another coaching change this season unless something really unforeseen happens. But losing 9-4 to the Columbus Blue Jackets is the type of game that gets a coach fired, okay? You lose 9-4 at home against the Blue Jackets, who are battling with you for last in the standings, You give up 9. That's the type of game that does get a coach fired. Now, I don't think it should. Like you brought up, Don Granato is a good coach. I also think there were the Buffalo Sabres. I know I'll admit it. I was guilty of it. And I think many others probably were too, of just overvaluing them at the start of the season, maybe taking what they did in the second half of last season and saying, okay, now it's time. They're ready to be a playoff team. They're still very young. They don't have experience in net. And in all fairness, Don Granato is still a relatively new coach in the National Hockey League too. I think you need time to grow with your team. And I think that's why the Buffalo Sabres can't and should not overreact to a loss like they had against Columbus or the start of the season like they've had, which has been very inconsistent. But if you're wanting me to answer the question, if there's a coach that could be, his seat could be getting warm, I got to think it's Granato. And we have to see a push from the Sabres here, you know, coming, you know, now we have the holiday freeze, but going into the holiday break and coming out of it for several months, we have to see a push or there could be a coaching change there in Buffalo. Another one, which only ruins the idea of consistency, by the way.
Exactly. And look, I'm not sure exactly how long we've been doing this fantastic show. I think it's a little 3 years. A
couple of years now. Yeah,
3 years. We have more tenure than 2/3 of the NHL coaches in this league. It is a horrendous job. There is no job security. Like, I know the saying is, as a coach, you're hired to be fired. But my God, the way that coaches are turned over, like, how do you ever foster any kind of consistency? And you look at the coaches who are tenured, right? Sullivan, Cooper, guys like that. They struggled a little bit. They got their systems in place, and now they're comfortable. And everybody that comes into those organizations understands how they need to play, what they need to do. And the coach actually has some clout because he's been there long enough to say, it's my way or it's the highway. All these new coaches, they don't have that.
Mm-hmm.
And your hammers, to use a curling term, are relatively few in today's game. Because of the cap, there's no ability to carry extra players to say, I'm going to take away your ice time. There's certainly no financial incentives. Like, it's a really hard league to motivate players in, I think.
Do you get concerned, if you're the Buffalo Sabres, that they played that game Tuesday night, and we're recording this Wednesday morning, and there wasn't a pushback? You know, like, they didn't push back against it. I mean, let's face it, against a weaker team in the National Hockey League, a team that should not be pushing them around, they did get pushed around, and they didn't get pushed back, because that's the concern. If you're looking at this in a very small window, that's the concern, that this team did not push back. They pushed back after the game, when they were asked about the coaching and if they're playing for the coach, if they're listening to the coach, they pushed back and they defended Granato because they love Granato, right? But I wonder if there is concern there that you're seeing, you know, if you're Kevin Adams or if you're Terry Pegula, the owner, that the team didn't push back. And is that on the coach? And, you know, is that what got DJ Smith fired in Ottawa? That, you know, they started to play a little bit better, but then they reverted back. So there's no pushback. I mean, we see toughness. You see guys that come and play hard every game, but it's different, right? Do you look at that and say, that's alarming? Because I do.
Yeah, there's a lot of troubling things about it. And I think the fact that only a few players stood up after and took responsibility for it, you know, is as troubling. You know, that's a game where you hope that everybody is in their locker after the game and saying, it's on us, it's on me, you know, we're going to fix it. But I also look, and Hakstol talks a little bit about this in the interview that we had with him, you know, leading up to the Winter Classic. We're 3 days away from the break, right? It's been a long first half of the season, a lot of things going on. It's Christmas week, family's in town. Like, there's a lot of things going on in players' lives. There's a lot of things going on in our lives as we try and do this podcast. And I always try and put some sort of a human face on this, right? We always look at these guys and we're like, they're professional athletes. They make a lot of money. They don't have anything else going on. This is their job. This is my job. Mm-hmm. I have other stuff going on. Right. So I kind of look at it in that context too, right? It's a really tough time in the year. You've played a lot of hockey. You see a little bit of a break. It's been a little bit ugly in some of these cities, and you're like, well, I can finally get a couple of days to get away from this unrelenting awfulness, and it's time to make a New Year's resolution, and we're going to come back, and we're going to be strong, and we're going to play better. And I think there's some teams just trying to hold on and get to that 3-day break when they can, you know, unwind it and try and figure it out.
Yeah, I mean, to that, I was going to say, you know what, the Arizona Coyotes players have a lot going on too, and they came back in that game. The Columbus Blue Jackets players have a lot going on, and they just put up 9, you know, against the Blue Jackets. So is there another way of looking at it? But here we are talking, Sean, about coaches and coaches on the hot seat. There are coaches in this league right now who are new to their teams who are doing a fantastic job with what they have right now. First one I look at, and I don't know how they're doing it, is Spencer Carberry with the Washington Capitals. It might be smoke and mirrors. It might not be sustainable. But here are the Washington Capitals scoring, I mean, just a shade over 2 goals per game. They're at like 2.33 per game. And they're right in the playoff race. In the Eastern Conference, they're a team that they play well defensively. Carberry's got them doing that. They're getting good goaltending. I think they're pretty structured. Low event hockey. Power play is abysmal. Ovechkin's not scoring. Nobody is scoring. Yet here are the Washington Capitals right there. And I think it's a testament to what Carberry, you know, the job that Spencer Carberry in his first season with the Capitals has done. But I do wonder, and I addressed this in my mailbag today as well. It ran on, you know, NHL.com on Wednesday. I don't think this is sustainable. You can't score under 2.5 goals per game and make the playoffs in this league. Last year, 14 of the 16 teams that made the playoffs, Sean, scored at least three per game. And the other two were at 2.90 and 2.91. The Capitals are going to have to find a way to score a lot more goals if they're going to be sustainable this season.
Yeah, I think that's true, but I also think that there's a defensive system in play now, right? And it's what we just talked about, right? Spencer Carberry came in and he put the system in, and I'm sure there were questions about it, right? Like they had had success under Peter, and you know, why do we have to change things, and who is this guy to tell me to change things? And then they start having success. And then it feeds off itself, right? And there's that confidence. And now Washington walks into games and they know they can win a 3-2 game. They know they can win a 2-1 game. And you know, when you have that ability to call on past successes, it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. Look, I watched the same thing last night. You want to talk about coaches who've done an incredible job. John Tortorella last night took the Philadelphia Flyers into New Jersey and played the lowest of low event games. And they won because they capitalized on 2 turnovers by maybe one of the top 3 players in the game right now in Jack Hughes. A really bad pass across the middle of his own zone in regulation, and then a horrendous drop pass in overtime with a player coming in on him, Tippett, who took it and brought it in and scored. They didn't have many other chances. But they're completely comfortable playing that game. And again, it's a confidence thing. You can play that game and you don't get rewarded. It's a lot of work. And after a while, you say, I don't want to do this anymore. Show me the results. I don't have any. But the Philadelphia Flyers, they look at the standings and they say, hard work's fun. Mm-hmm. I like doing this. I like the way this feels when I can go in the locker room on the road and celebrate a win over a playoff team from last year. I'm willing to do this work.
Kind of goes back to what you were saying before about coaches with clout, I think. You know, like John Tortorella has that. He can walk into that room and say, this is what I've done. And with this system, it's worked. I'm able to do that now. You guys play this way, it'll work. Because the talent is not, they're not more talented than the New Jersey Devils. They're not more talented than some of the teams that they're beating, but they're working. They're working for it. Part of that is the coach. They're taking on the mentality of their coach. Maybe the Capitals are doing that too. We don't know, because I don't really know what Spencer Carberry is as a coach yet in the National Hockey League. We know what he is as an assistant, which he was with Toronto. We know he was a successful head coach in Hershey, with the Capitals American Hockey League affiliate, but he doesn't have that clout. But here they are, finding ways. And you know what's interesting, actually, is the Capitals, when they play tonight, Wednesday night, against the New York Islanders, we talk about the Capitals as being like that veteran team, an older team trying to get the playoffs one last time or make one last run. Their three first-round draft picks from 2019 through 2022 are going to be in the lineup against the New York Islanders. First time they've had all three of those first-round picks. So the as this is going on, it looks like the Capitals are starting to get younger too, which is a really good sign. It's a team that's almost trying to do a rebuild on the fly while making the playoffs. You know, it's going to be interesting to see how that goes, how that flies through. But I still, even with the clout that John Tortorella has and the defensive structure and the work that the Capitals are putting in, I'm not buying either one of these teams as being a team that we're talking about as being in the playoff race come mid-March. Let's call it mid-March. The Capitals don't have enough offense. They don't score enough. Now they're maybe a little too young at times. And the Philadelphia Flyers, I do wonder if they can continue and sustain this type of level throughout an 82-game season, which is really, really hard to do when you really don't have that game breaker or two that you can rely on and just say, all right, he's going to get it for us tonight.
Well, that's the problem. You can't have an off night and win, right? Yep. There's other teams in this league, Boston, you know, jumps to mind, Vegas jumps to mind, where you can have an off night and you have guys, you know, Pasternak, Eichel, players like that who can just win you a game. Kucherov in Tampa Bay, you can have an off night. Kucherov will win you a game. Like, it's just that simple. They don't have that margin of error. But I think the biggest thing, going back to John Tortorella, who's going to coach his 1,500th game before the calendar turns 2024, most ever by an American, I think top six in the NHL. There's a reason why he did that. But when I look at Philadelphia, like, I don't know if you remember when he came in, before he even started, he said, there's a problem here.
Oh, yeah.
There's a problem in our room. He fixed that problem. He was given the leeway to fix that problem. Players were moved out. Other players were brought in. The culture changed. And now the players that are sitting in there, some who had played for him in the past, Cam Atkinson, again, drums to mind with Columbus, know what he's about and know what can happen when you play the way he wants you to play. And they're conveying it to other players who are accepting it. And I think that's huge, right? Like, I think the locker room is a huge part of it. And again, it goes back to what I talked about before with the salary cap and the inability to make hockey trades and everything else that's going on. It's very difficult as a coach to institute your system if you don't have the pieces that you believe in.
Yes, it is. It is very difficult. And there's another team I want to talk about, and that's the Nashville Predators with Andrew Brunette in his first season. But let's do that on the other side of the interview that we did here with Dave Haxtell, the coach of the Seattle Kraken. He joined us. They're on a road trip in Southern California right now, but they're gearing up for the Winter Classic, New Year's Day against the Vegas Golden Knights at T-Mobile Park, home of the Seattle Mariners. But there's a lot of work to do in Seattle before they get there. Here's our interview with Dave Haxtell. Dave, thanks so much for joining us. And I know you guys are in Southern California awaiting some rain, but hopefully not as we speak right now. But, I mean, are you feeling any Winter Classic vibes yet? I mean, the truck arrived in Seattle. I know you got a lot going on here and you're not home, but are you starting to feel it before you even left?
Yeah, absolutely, Dan. We're fully in the spirit for the Winter Classic. Absolutely. You got it. We just got to get through this road trip real quick and into Christmas first. But yeah, you know what? You start to feel the excitement. I mean, there's a buildup to this event, right? And the NHL does such a great job of that buildup. And there's a lot of excitement in and around the city of Seattle for the game. And it's coming close. It's not that far away anymore. It's felt like it's in a long ways in the distance, but it's not the case. It's right around the corner.
Well, Dan's ready. He's got all his swag on to get you in the mood for the game if you're not ready yet. So, but I'm just curious, as a coach, and I always wonder this, there's so much going on for you right now. It's almost the winter break. Yeah. The roster freeze is going to happen. You guys aren't exactly where you want to be. How do you juggle all of this, right? Because you want your players to have the best experience possible. For some, it'll be the only time they ever play outdoors. But there's some serious business that needs to get done as well.
Absolutely. Right now it's regular business as you lead into, the Winter Classic. I mean, the event itself is going to become front and center A few days, before. But right now, I mean, we've come out of a 6-game road, our homestand. We're now on the week, on the road for a week here. And like you say, every point is critical for us. We're playing more overtime games than anybody in the league right now. We're trying to scratch and claw our way back into it in terms of points, but most importantly, just trying to take care of business every day. There's preparations and everything else that will go on for the Winter Classic. Some of the media attention and the things that happen in behind the scenes, as you guys know, is all part of it. But really, it's business as usual right now.
You know, Dave, it's funny you mentioned it, because I did write down a stat here right in my notes. 5-3-9. That's the record in one goal games for your team this season. So it tells you you're in every game, right? I mean, just about every game. But that number 9, 5-3-9, that's 9 points you gained, but it's also can be looked at as 9 points you didn't get either. And those points are critical. Like you said, how do you rationalize that in your mind as you look at your team right now and the way it plays and has been playing this season, though, those, that amount of points gained, if you will, or lost, if you will?
Yeah. If you even take just a portion of that, right? If you take 5 of those 9, that's a big difference right now in the standing. So you can't go back and get those points back. But one of the things I think we have a clear understanding in is that, we're going to be involved in a lot of close games. So we have to be able to alter the outcome of that, of some of these games by one goal. Right now we're really, pushing to score. We're struggling to score as much as we want. That's something that you can work at, you can improve, and you can always make some strides in. Right now, we said, hey, let's make sure we're drilling down and not giving up anything extra. Let's generate off of playing well defensively. Let's do a little bit extra where we can control it on the defensive side and shut it down a little bit more, all the while knowing that, as a group, we want to push to be able to create and generate a little bit more offense. And that's not going to help getting those 9 points back, but we have to make sure we can affect the points that are coming up, because our team's going to continue to be in a lot of close, tight hockey games.
Last season, it seemed like everybody contributed. Like, you turn around and somebody was scoring and you're like, who's that guy? How does he have this many points? Yeah. This year, obviously, that hasn't happened. I don't know that the depth's different. Is it just puck luck at points, or is it a confidence thing where when one guy doesn't start going, maybe other guys end up the same way? How do you look at it?
I believe it's a combination of everything. You look at the shooting percentages and the way we started off this year compared to where we were last year. Whether or not it's realistic to replicate where we're at last year, that's a different argument. But a reality is we haven't scored quite as much at the top of our lineup as we had hoped to. And we haven't had the depth scoring that we had through last year's lineup. That was something that was really important for us. And as you look at some of our recent success, just over the last 4 or 5 games here, all of a sudden we've been generating scoring from our fourth line. The Belmer line has been providing, they've been providing significant offense on a nightly basis. And all of a sudden, you start to see our team loosen up. You start to see some of the results come. As I speak to that, we're going to have to retool that again, because, we're going to lose Belly here for a little while. So that's one of the things that our team has had to deal with, as you look throughout the top of our lineup through the depth, or, different injuries throughout the entire first half here, which that's part of the NHL season. So again, we're going to have to adapt and overcome that, because we do need that depth scoring.
Yeah. It looks like your team's built on it, right? I mean, it was built on it last year too. There's a lot of good players, but there isn't that, go-to guy right on your team that you could just say, all right, we're going to put him out and he is going to make something happen right now, like a McDavid or a McKinnon or a guy like that. When you're coaching a team like that, who relies on the depth, is it different than coaching a team, do you think, that has that guy or two?
Well, for sure. It is different. In a way, it's, for our group, it should empower our group. Everybody has to do their part. Everybody, on each and every night, everybody's going to get an opportunity to do that. If you got one or two or three guys at the top of your roster, you're going to ride those guys, and they're going to be the ones that you count on to come through for you in a critical time for us. We have that. Don't get me wrong. We have guys that we rely on, that we count on. But we also rely heavily on, you know, a different guy each night coming through and being able to score a goal at a big time. And we've lacked that a little bit. We found it a little bit recently. And while we're finding that more consistent, like I said, I'm going to revert back. We've got to be a little bit better. And you got to find a way to take away a half a goal a night on average. And that changes a lot of our outcomes. If we can't count on scoring the extra goal or two on a nightly basis, you know, we've got to find a way to balance it out.
Matty Berniers is one of those guys that you've counted on him last year. He had a fantastic year. The results aren't there this year. Sometimes with guys in the second year, there's a little bit of a struggle, sophomore slump. He's talked about things being harder for him. He's a pretty laid back, casual guy. What's your message been to him as he kind of tries to fight his way through this?
Well, a couple different messages as you go through. Number one, Matty is a very realistic guy. You know, he evaluates his game in a real honest way, for better and worse. He's not a guy that's too hard on himself, but he's also really realistic with himself and the way that he's playing on a nightly basis. So it starts there. We just want, you know, Matty to stay empowered and feel good. He's a guy that brings such good energy to the rink, whether he's coming out of a successful night or not. He's ready to come back to the rink and work the exact same way as he did the day before. So he's had stretches where he's had struggles, not just offensively, but his game just, you know, hasn't come easily to him. And I think that's natural as the league figures out a young player a little bit in year two. Things are going to get a little bit more difficult. I'm seeing really good signs out of his game over our last stretch, our game in Dallas last night. You know, we feel like he was one of the better players on the ice. He looked like himself, with confidence with the puck, pace with the puck. And he and his line mates were generating as well as, you know, playing really a real responsible game, which is a huge piece of Matty's game. So really the message to him is continue being who he is. We try to help him with, you know, little details on the ice. If the puck's not going in the net, if the offense isn't coming, we obviously talk about those little things, but big picture, remain confident, keep working hard, and just, you know, stay within himself and continue being who he is.
You know, Dave, as I'm listening to you answer that question, I was thinking to myself, is Matty Berniers a small version, a reflection of the team in general? You know, last season things went well, and, you know, now this season, you know, the league's figured it out a little bit. Here's what the Kraken do. Here's what Berniers does. Like, do you see it? Can it be that way? I mean, it might be simplified, but is it that?
That's oversimplified, but that's a part of it. You know, you go through stretches, and we've all been through them, where things go as well as they can possibly go. Everything seems to go your way. Whether it be, you know, through staying healthy, through bounces, through different things. You go through other stretches where it just feels a little more difficult. And, our first 30 plus games here, nothing has come easy for us. And our group has really had to look within themselves and continue to dig deep. And we've had a couple opportunities where it's gotten pretty hard, and the guys could have showed up, and their mentality, their attitude could have went the wrong direction, but that hasn't happened. We've continually come back and pushed back in the right direction. And that's, you know, that's a real credit, I think, to the group in the room. We don't have a guy that wears the C for us, but we have some really good veterans in that room. Some young guys are part of that leadership and part of that mentality. And regardless of whether it turns and becomes, if things start to roll our way and go a little bit easier or not, this group just will stick with it and continue to work to find the solutions as you go through the middle portion of the season here.
Dave, one of the great things about the Winter Classic or any of these games that the NHL does is they're national games, right? They're events. People tune in to see them. They might not know the teams. A lot of people don't get to see your team because you play on the West Coast and you play late all the time. This is a mid-afternoon game. Some people are going to get to see Vince Dunn. And to me, he is perhaps the most underrated defenseman in the league. What are they going to see when they see this kid play?
Yeah, they're going to see a guy that quietly is starting to control the flow of play. He's a guy that he's taken more and more minutes for us. He's playing against the other team's top competition on a nightly basis. He's taken on some of the top matchups, not not straight up, not 100%. We got two pairs that we feel we use against the other team's top guys. But he's a guy that's become comfortable in that situation, defending hard right now, getting us out of our zone. And he's got this jump and this impact offensively with the puck. There's a significant confidence to his game. And he's worked for that. He's worked very hard over, we're 2.5 years in now as an organization with Vince, and the steps and the strides that he's made in his presence, his poise, and his competitiveness on a regular basis on the ice is really significant. So he's a guy we rely on a lot. We've given him the opportunity this year to really step into that number one role offensively in terms of power play and in different situations. And he's taken that ball and run with it.
Why has Seattle worked so well?
Seattle is a phenomenal sports city. For anybody that has spent any time in and around the Pacific Northwest and in and around Seattle, it doesn't take long to figure out how passionate the entire community is about sports in general, from pro sports through college sports through youth sports. Hockey's taken hold. There's some deep rooted history in hockey in this area. But right from the advent, as the Kraken burst onto the scene, it's become, and continued to grow, especially through year two with some of the success with a playoff appearance, with a playoff win. The significant growth and how it's grabbed the community and vice versa, has been really impressive. But it's an unbelievable sports city. And to add hockey and NHL hockey and the excitement of NHL hockey in our building into the community and now taking it outdoors on a national basis, Seattle's just going to continue to explode as an NHL city.
No matter how many of these games we play, when people play in them, they're always amazed, right? You play outdoors, it brings back so many memories. I need to know what the outdoor hockey scene was like in Warburg.
It was cold. No, you know what? When I was two or three, we had a little rink out on. Grew up on a farm, but out in the front yard, there was a little rink there. Even better, I remember some of the practices as a really young kid outdoors in Warburg. Before we had the luxury of being in the Warburg Arena on a regular basis. Skating on the backyard on the small creek river that ran through in the back of the farm with my brother and friends. That's all part of it. It's all part of that. And then you can throw in all the boot hockey that was played that had nothing to do with being on a sheet of ice, just because of the winter outdoor setting. So huge part of the community, huge part of your of our culture growing up.
And you've coached in a few of these, right? I mean, you got one in when you were at North Dakota and yep. One when you were with the Flyers too. What are they like to coach in?
Oh, they're unreal. The one with North Dakota was in Omaha, and we got rained out that day. We barely were able to play the game, but we finally were able to play it 6 hours late, I think it was, with Philly in Pittsburgh. What stands out to me, the day before practice day was beautiful. The family skate was absolutely gorgeous. Some of the families were out there in shorts and t-shirts, and we flipped the game day, man. And that stadium in Pittsburgh, I had heard legend of the wind howling through there. And we found out what that felt like on game day. It was cold, but just an awesome setting. There's a different rumble in these stadiums, in the outdoor stadiums, right? When you're down at ice level, there's just a different rumble and feel from the crowd. It's just such a, it's a massive setting, and it's a spectacle, and it's fun to be part of. And it flips immediately as soon as you get to game time, it flips immediately to the competitiveness of those 2 points.
Before we let you go, one last question. It might be the most important one. Have you picked out your outfit yet for the game? This is a big thing for the coaches. Huge.
Hey, I've seen some of the outfits that some of the teams have picked. I know our guys have picked some. We'll wait for the reviews. I think it's going to be pretty awesome. But coaches, man, we need some help. So maybe there's some suggestions out there that can be thrown our way. I don't know if we can one up what's been done. We'll try to find something that's classic. and something that's suitable to the Pacific Northwest as well.
Let's just hope it's not an umbrella. How about that?
That's a deal. That's a deal.
All right. Good stuff. Dave, thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate it, all right?
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
Really good stuff there, Sean, with Dave Hackstall. He's got a lot of work to do with that Kraken team. They're not the same as they were a year ago. But we'll look forward to seeing him at the Winter Classic. Can't wait to get there. It's always my favorite event of the year, and it'll be a lot of fun in Seattle when we get there. I think we both arrive on December 29th. The game is January 1st, so we got a lot of time in Seattle, where I just was. It's a great city. I just hope it doesn't rain the entire time like it did when I was there earlier this month, but nevertheless. I mentioned it before we went to the interview with Dave Hackstall. I wanted to talk about Andrew Burnett and the Nashville Predators. I got a question about them in my mailbag, too, and I'll bring that up in a second here. But we talked about coaches, Sean, who are doing a really good job in their first year, and Brunette deserves to be in that category. This team won 5 of their first 15 games. They were 5-10-0. And since then, I think they're, 14-4 or 14-4-1 in that neighborhood. They did just lose 5-2 to the Vancouver Canucks, but they're playing really well. Their goaltending is solid. Their defense is strong. They're getting production. Their power play is doing well. This is a team I know you've liked for a long time, Sean. You continue to put them in our Super 16, even when they weren't playing that well. So I think you're getting a little bit of reward for that now.
You know, sometimes your confidence is rewarded, I guess. Other times your lack of confidence comes back to bite you. I'm getting roasted pretty well on the old internet about my inability to rank the New York Islanders in the Super 16. But that's a team right now that's, even after beating Edmonton last night, is 15-16 this year. Now, Nashville's a different story. Like you said, they started out horrendous, and they've come back, and they've played well. They don't blow leads. They play, especially for Andrew Brunette, I think they play a very disciplined style. I think we all thought that he would go in there and he would awaken their offense, which he's done a little bit. But defensively, I think they're far more structured than even I thought they were going to be. And their stars have come out to play, right? Philip Forsberg's driving this whole thing, 36 points in 32 games. Roman Josi's playing 26 minutes a night, has 27 points. Ryan O'Reilly's come in, he's played fantastic for them. 13 goals already this year. Like, when I look at them, their stars have come out, and then they've had other players kind of pick it up. You look at, like, a Tommy Novak, who was really good at the end of last year. You look at a Colton Sissons, who scored so many big goals for them already. He has 10 goals this year in 32 games, yeah, which is kind of ridiculous. But guys do have good offensive seasons under Andrew Brunette. He's a guy that really is able to teach offense. But again, I think their defense has been much better than it's been in the past. And they have the human eraser. Like, I don't even need to look at his numbers. UC Saros is the biggest difference maker in this league on any given night. If they make mistakes 9.5 out of 10 times, he makes sure that they don't hurt.
It's a bold statement. Biggest difference maker in the league. It's a bold statement. All right. I'm going to disagree. I think he's up there, but game changers like McDavid might be a bit of a difference maker. McKinnon, who we'll talk about in a little bit, might be a bit of a difference maker too, bigger difference maker than Saros. But he's a goaltender, so it's a unique position. It's a different set of rules, if you will, in terms of ranking difference makers. The Predators, look, they're 13-4-0 in their last 17 games. That's what they are. And unlike the Kraken, who we just talked to Dave Hackstall about this, where they're losing a lot of one-goal games, especially in overtime or a shootout, they're winning. The Predators are winning the one-goal games. Now, they've got 8 of their 13 wins in this stretch have been by one goal. So they're finding ways to win the tight games. That's a good coaching job. That is really good. But the question I got in the mailbag, which I thought was interesting, does the success that they've had now change the philosophy, change the plan and the process for new general manager Barry Trotz and what he was thinking going into this season? And I don't think it does at all, because they never said they were going to be a rebuilding team. They never said they were a team that was going to tear it down. Trotz, in fact, said the exact opposite. He said, you don't have to tear it down in order to become a good team again. You can do this with what you have and continue to build and build structure in a good team. I mean, look what he did with the New York Islanders. Look what he did with the Predators for years as their coach. they signed Ryan O'Reilly. They signed Luke Shen. They brought in Gustav Nyquist. I mean, they didn't bring these guys in so they would be rebuilding. You brought in veteran guys to bolster a veteran team that is also bringing along young players. This is not a team that ever was in a rebuilding position, I think, at the start of this season. They were in a let's see how we do situation at the start of this season. They're doing quite well. In fact, they have a lot of cap space, and if they continue to do quite well, I think Barry Trotz is going to be a significant buyer, actually, around the trade deadline, because he's going to look and see, okay, where can we add without disrupting the chemistry we have? I don't think they're going to go crazy, but I think they could add somebody who could be a top nine forward, somebody along those lines. Perhaps we'll see where they are in February and early March. But the plan and the process doesn't change, because it was all built on how they were going to play, not say what's going on in Montreal, you know, or in other places that have gone through a complete teardown to build it back up. It's not what they're doing in Nashville, and they never had the intent to do that in Nashville.
No, I think he straddled defense perfectly. Like right now, to me, he's one of the top candidates for GM of the year, you know, almost halfway through the year. You know, I think he left all his options open. Here's what we're going to do. Like you talked about, you bring in Ryan O'Reilly, you bring in Nyquist, you bring in all these guys, Shen. Maybe not O'Reilly, but Nyquist and Shen are perfect chips at the trade deadline. Colorado, you need a defenseman? Look who I got. What are you going to give me for him if things didn't go well? But now things are going well. He holds on to those pieces and he adds more pieces, and who knows what happens. Like I think that was a perfect, as you look at it in hindsight, that was a perfect way to approach this season. He had pieces that he, on short-term contracts that he knows he can move, and he has foundational pieces. His goaltender, his defenseman, Forsberg. Like those pieces are who they are. Right. And they're surrounded by a bunch of young players who are coming up. And if those young players didn't grab the rope and start pulling on it, he had the ability to pull the chute. But they have. And now he doesn't need to.
Yeah. And I look, and I think, unlike what I was saying before about, you know, the Capitals and the Flyers, I think this is sustainable for the Predators. I think that they're a team that could be, you know, that can get in the playoffs and play this way for the rest of the season, because it's a very balanced approach. They're getting goals. They're getting offense. They have talent. They have elite goaltending. Their special teams have been good. There's a lot of things that are going in the right direction for them at the same time, but they're sustainable things that they can continue to build on within their game. Whereas I look at the Capitals, as I mentioned, like they're not scoring. They're finding ways to win in this weird way, like 2-1 in a shootout, giving up. But they scored one goal in their last two games, in each of their last two games, and they ended up with points in both. So I don't think all that's sustainable, but it's different in Nashville. So they are a team to watch, and I'm finally agreeing with you, Sean, that they should be in our Super 16, and I will have them ranked this week. So I'm going to just follow along. I'm going to be your follower. Is that all right?
Yeah, that's great. But again, Dan, the reason is the goaltender, right?
Yeah,
UC Soros, he makes them confident. Other teams are afraid to make a mistake. And especially if you're going to be offense, right? Like Brunette wants to push the pace. When you push the pace like that and you open up, you make mistakes. And when they make mistakes, oh, I turned it over at the blue line. They're going to go the other way on a breakaway. That's okay. Let's see what UC Soros does. And it's completely unfair to him, but 9.5 out of 10 times, he does it. So that allows you as a player to say, I'm going to go, and I'm not going to worry about making mistakes. And that freedom is liberating.
All right, big Soros fan. John's his agent. I get it. I joke, but you're right. He is a terrific goalie, and he does bring confidence to that team, and that team is playing with confidence right now. How about the Colorado Avalanche, also in the Central Division? Nathan MacKinnon is just absolutely on fire right now. 28 points in a 16-game point streak as we speak here on Wednesday. It's the longest active streak in the National Hockey League. He can tie William Nylander for the longest streak, you know, in the league this season, 17 games when they play against the Senators on Thursday. So that's the good. But did you see the interview with Devon Toews after the game against Chicago on Tuesday? They lose the game. And Devon Toews had some very interesting things to say. One thing very interesting. And he was basically saying, there's a couple of guys in this team right now that think they're playing good, and they're kidding themselves. Boy, that's a grenade thrown right into the room. You like to use that analogy? That's a grenade thrown into the room by an experienced guy, a veteran guy, who I think has the clout, as we talked about with coaches, to say something like that. There's a lot of, there's a couple, I don't think he said a lot. I have to go back. There's guys in this room who believe they're playing well and they're fooling themselves. What do you think of that?
I think that's awesome. And I think he's right. I think this is a team, they're 1 point out of first place in the Central Division. So they're not a mess, but you can't lose to some of the teams they've lost to. And you can't play the way that they played on given nights where it looks like they don't care and not have some sort of accountability. And I think that's what's made Colorado so good in the last couple of years, is that there is that accountability and it's driven from the room. You know, Jared Bednar is a great coach. He's won at every level, but he established a culture, but I don't think that he enforces it anymore. I think the players enforce it. And good on Devin Taves, who is not a superstar on that team. He would be a superstar on most teams, but because of Cale Makar and McKinnon and Rantanen and all those players that we talk about, he's kind of a second-tier player for Colorado, which tells you how good they are. But good for him to step up and say, look, this isn't good enough. We're not good enough. We can be way better than this. And again, I think it's perfect timing. You're going to take that home with you and mull on it over a few days off where you get to mentally recharge and say, you know, either he's right and we're going to be better, or he's not and we're going to keep doing the things that we do. But I think if I was going to put money on it, this is a Colorado team, when they do some of that self-reflection over the break, are going to be like, we're better than this and we need to go show it.
It's inconsistency. I mean, they're 4-5-2 in their last 11 games. And you look at some of the games, right? They lose to Chicago, team they shouldn't lose to, let's be honest. That's after a 6-2 win against San Jose. That's the type of win they should be getting, right? That came after a 6-2 loss against Winnipeg. Okay, Winnipeg's a good team. They're not four goals better than Colorado. That was before that. It was a 5-1 win against Buffalo. It's one way or the other. They've also lost to Philadelphia. I mean, they've lost a couple of times here to Winnipeg, you know, in the last couple of weeks. It's inconsistency. And I think that's probably the thing where a guy like Devon Taves is like, guys are looking around and going, oh, I think I'm okay. Like, this isn't good enough. 4-5-2 for the Avalanche in an 11-game stretch is not good enough. Losing 6-2 to a team, I don't care if it's Winnipeg who are playing well. It's not the way they are. They should never be in that position. They're too good to be in that position. So that's where it comes out of frustration more than anything. I'm not worried about the Avalanche, Sean. I think they're a very good team. They're a first-place type of team in that division. You do get, and I think if you talk to the Tampa Bay Lightning, would be the first to tell you about that, this, you can get complacent in the regular season when you know you're a good team and you know you're a playoff team and you know you have the ability to turn it on. It happens where you start to think, if we don't finish first, does it really matter that much? We're trying to work on our game here, you know, okay. Second's okay. Third's okay. We know we're a good team. We know we can turn it on. But you can't get complacent for too long. And I think that's the message here from Taves, is let's nip this in the bud right now, right? We got the holiday break approaching. We got a couple of games here. Let's go. Let's get a good feeling here. They got the Ottawa Senators and they got the Coyotes before the break. Those are two very winnable games. They're both at home. Get it done, and they'll have a much better feeling. And what Tave said after this loss against Chicago kind of be wiped away, or it'll be looked at and say that's the difference maker.
Yeah, and I think he just wants more guys, right? Like, when you look at them, they're so top heavy. Their top five guys, Taze included, are carrying the water for this team. After that, there's nothing there. And they need more. They need more than that. They need to be a tougher team to play when you get down into their third and fourth lines. And I think that Joe Sakic thought that they were a tougher team to play. You know, he made some changes to make them tougher to play and to be deeper and not to have to rely on those top guys. So when you get to the playoffs, they're not worn to a nub. And that hasn't been the case so far. They need more depth scoring.
Yeah, they need more from Drouin. They need more from O'Connor, Miles Wood. Those type of players. they got to deliver more for this team as it goes on. So we'll see where it goes from them. All right. So before we get out of here, Sean, the World Juniors are coming up. So I'll give you the floor because I really don't know much about it right now. I'll be the first to admit it. We go through this exercise every year. I get into it, but I don't get into it weeks in advance. The NHL draft class guys do. And so you got to listen to them because they're doing all their World Juniors primer. Mike Morial and Adam Kimmelman, they know everything to do with the World Juniors that are coming up in Gothenburg, Sweden. I know where it is, at least. And you got to listen to NHL draft class for that. But Sean, what are you looking forward to in the World Juniors?
I'm looking forward to the next crop of NHLers. Like when you think about last year's tournament and all the players that are in the NHL now and contributing, Bedard, those kind of players, like that's what you're watching over Christmas, right? Like, you, especially with it being in Europe, you get up in the morning, you get your seltzer or your coffee or whatever you drink, you sit in front of the TV, maybe sure, a bowl that's of what cereal, and you get to watch some hockey and you get to watch the future of the NHL. Like, anybody that cares about the NHL should care about this because these are players who are on the brink of being here. You know, you look at like a Celebrini, you look at like a Gauthier, you look at those players, they're all going to be in the NHL next year. You look at the last 10 captains for the U.S. It goes all the way back to Eichel, was 10 years ago. They're all in the NHL and they're all contributing. So why wouldn't you pay attention? It's free hockey. It's all on the NHL Network. And if you're in Canada, it's on TSN. You're on vacation, most everybody. It's free extra hockey. And it's good. And it's nation on nation. And it brings out the best in these players. I don't think it can be beat, personally.
Yeah, it's best on best in their peer group. And it is really good. Once I get into it, I really do enjoy it. The one thing, though, The Boston Bruins, they sent Matthew Poitra, who had been playing for them, to go play for Team Canada. And normally, you know me, Sean, I'm like, if you're in the NHL, you're not a junior hockey player. You shouldn't be going to play in the World Juniors. I've put that argument up many different times. In this case, I actually agree with it. I think the Bruins are doing the right thing by Poitra by sending him back to play for junior hockey, to go play for his country. It's a dream come true for him. He talked about that. It matters, and I get that totally. But here's a guy who's been playing 27 games in National Hockey League against the best players in the world, and now he can go into the World Juniors, get a little break, doesn't have to do the grind of the NHL season for a little bit, and he can go be a leader for Team Canada. And he can bring what he learned in the Bruins locker room into that locker room, try to go win a gold medal, and they've already told him, your spot's secure. You're coming back here to Boston. You will be on the Bruins when this World Juniors is over. I think this could be actually really beneficial for a guy like Poitra. I'm not usually the guy who says that, but I think in this case, it actually makes a lot of sense.
It makes a huge amount of sense. A, Canada needs a leader. There was only one returning player as they go for another gold medal, looking to three-peat. So that's a huge part of it. But the bigger part is for him, right? The role he's playing for the Bruins, he's kind of got his teeth kicked in a little bit, right? Yeah. And a way that it's mentally draining. There's so much responsibility. He's had some one-on-ones with Montgomery where Montgomery's had to sit him down and say, you're not doing this, you need to do this. Like, I think it's been really mentally taxing for him. And now he gets to go play a completely different role for Canada, to get his confidence back up, to say, these are the things I can do. I haven't forgotten how to do these other things that the Bruins don't really ask me to do, and come back not physically refreshed, because it's a really tough tournament physically, the amount of games you have to play in such a short period of time, but mentally refreshed and mentally excited for what lies ahead with the Bruins. So I think it's great, and he's certainly going to help Team Canada, who's probably, again, the favorite, but you know, I think the Americans will have a little something to say about that when it's all said and done. But they have a surprising team too. No Yzerman on that team, who's supposed to be, you know, a consensus top two pick in this draft, and the U.S. didn't take him. They took other players in his place. You know, with David Carl coaching that team, and I guess trying to make a more complete team than just adding goal scorers. you always wonder, that's always been Canada's conundrum when it comes to Olympics and everything else, when they try and build a complete team and they add a checking line and everybody's like, what about the six guys that scored 40 goals last year that you don't have on the team? You know, it's kind of a weird thing, and I'm excited to see how it plays out. There's another tournament before we go that's over the break too, the Spengler Cup, and friend of the show, Bruce Boudreau, who does media everywhere but comes on our show occasionally, he's coaching Canada, and that is going to be fantastic. Joe Thornton is one of his is part of the management team. So that's to me, that's always a great tournament too, and that is a quick one. You need to play a lot of hockey in a short period of time to win that thing.
Yep, Bruce Boudreau coaching Canada there. Joe Thornton, part of the management team. That's a good one. The World Juniors is coming up. Like you said, all games on NHL Network. We will not have a show next week, so the roster freeze will be over, and that's when you can get rid of me, Sean, if you'd like to. But I hope you keep me around. We'll be in Seattle for the Winter Classic soon. The Chirp, Darren Millard on The Chirp, had Zach Whitecloud on. He's a terrific, what a talker Zach Whitecloud is. So I can't wait to go listen to that, Sean. But, you know, we'll say happy holidays, right? I mean, we're not going to have a show next week. So happy holidays and maybe even a happy new year.
Yeah, all the best to you and your family over the holidays, and all the best to the listeners. I'm going to talk to Bob Bender about a potential trade, but I think with the salary cap and the lack of roster flexibility, unfortunately, our lineup's going to stay the same. And our New Year resolution will be to be even better than we've been this year.
We'll keep grinding away. Hopefully you'll keep me around. Enjoy the hockey.